I'm Ebony K. Williams, your attorney at law and host. Welcome to Holding Court, where we analyze the very latest legal headlines everybody's already talking about. We dig into how the courts impact the culture. We break it all down for you, and we go straight from gavel to your news feed. And I promise you this, y'all, every single week, we're going to keep it a buck, keep it 100. Right, Dustin Ross?
That's right, Ebony. Let's go ahead and hold court.
Let's do it. My beautiful Dustin Ross, my love, did you catch the Oscars over the weekend, and what'd you think?
Well, I definitely caught them. You know, Ebony, I'm obsessed with Oscar culture, let's call it that, and Oscar acceptance speeches and all of those things. I love, love, love them. So I definitely caught the Oscars this weekend, and you know, I have thoughts.
Oh, I know you do. That's why I was waiting. I didn't even text you because I was like, you know, I'm going to save it for the show. Top level, what were your kind of quick takeaways, quick reactions?
Really quickly, I'm happy for Daniel. I wanted justice for Andra Day. I thought it would have been a beautiful story for her to, you know, transition from music into film like that with a successful, just netting, you know, her gains at the very top, winning an Oscar. I thought that would be great, but didn't happen. So,
thank goodness she's got that Golden Globe to cry her tears with.
Yes, she does. Yes, she does.
That's good.
So that was great. I know her won for Best Original Song. I'm sure they're going to have a great time at the engraving station at the Governor's Ball, right? Whose is it? Hers. Whose award is it? But it was great though.
Okay, great. Yeah, I caught some peeps in between my Sunday night Bravo viewing, and I'll start with the fashion. I will say that was just great to see a real red carpet back. I want to say that was the first red carpet we've really seen since COVID. And so I was here for that. It just made me excited. It was a limited red carpet. You know, it had some hiccups. And I'm just going to go straight to it. I was extremely horrified by who is really my beauty icon. And in many ways, fashion icon. You already know where I'm going.
I know where you're going.
Queen Halle Berry. And Halle really, for me, never really misses, Dustin. Not really. And to me, that Nene Leakes choppy bob.
I don't know what that was.
That was horrifying. Because I've actually never seen Halle look anything short of stunningly gorgeous. And it was a no for me, dog.
Yeah. She's an icon in the black beauty community.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it was a shame to see that. That's all I'm going to say, because I'm not going to disrespect Halle goddamn Berry on this podcast.
But
that was not right. We'll just say that.
No.
That was not right.
And that was... Now, somebody who is, to me, actually becoming pretty much the queen of the red carpet, Regina King.
Oh, my God.
I mean, never
flawless,
misses.
Flawless.
That custom Louis Vuitton, honey, it gave. It was so different.
Yep.
And what I love about Regina King, Dustin, is not only does she never miss. A lot of people that never miss because they're always playing it safe, right? So they always look beautiful, but it's
sticking
always
to a formula.
Correct. Yeah. It's always Sophia Vergara with the mermaid trumpet dress.
There you
it's
go.
Always
yep.
Jennifer Aniston with the slinky black spaghetti, you know, sheath gown. Whatever. Regina King gives us opulence, color, crystals, shapes.
Absolutely.
Variety with glam, fashion,
style. Fashion, yes.
Oh my God. That woman is just flawless.
Love to see it and love to see her looking the part. You know, she's Hollywood royalty and she literally looks like a trip. Well, what you think of when you think of what a movie star looks like.
A star.
That's what Regina King executes every time and it always translates well. So
she understands, Dustin, her currency in Hollywood.
Yeah.
She knows she is not just A-list. She's at the top of the A-list at this moment.
A plus.
So when she opens the ceremony with a speech that was so nuanced, really, because basically she says, I know a lot of y'all are tired of hearing about Black Lives Matters. So, you know, in so many words, but basically I don't give a damn because as the mother of a black son, you will hear our trauma and our story and you will deal. And
period.
I thought that was the perfect way to open that evening.
She never misses.
You know, Dustin, lots on the Twitterverse around what people are considering a snub.
Chadwick.
Of Chadwick and Viola, and you already mentioned Audra Day. I got thoughts, but I want to know yours. We'll start with the Best Actor Award that Anthony Hopkins won.
Yes. Well, I mean, Sir Anthony Hopkins, that's a hard full stop right there.
That's,
you know,
right.
What I mean, how do you even, and I have an unpopular opinion about the whole posthumous awards, you know, thing. If they ain't here, let's do a tribute and give this award to someone who can be actively benefiting from accepting this award. You know what I mean? I understand the honor and the reverence that they award these people with these trophies posthumously, you know, for, but it's just dumb to me, if I'm being honest. They should have just given Chadwick a beautiful tribute, presented a statue to his family that represented something, but the award for the best performance could have been, you know, I'm okay with things.
You know, I'm going to join you and be very unpopular as well, because listen, I didn't see the film for which Sir Anthony Hopkins got the award for. So what I'm not about to do personally is sit up here and talking about somebody was robbed. Now, of course, I saw Chadwick's performance. It was brilliant.
Yes, it was.
Was it Oscar worthy? Absolutely.
Yes,
but am I going to sit up here and say what Anthony Hopkins did in his role was not? I can't say that. I'm not going to say that.
You know, Chadwick deserved his things, but. I just have a different opinion again about that. If I'm going,
I understand what you mean. Yeah, and
tell
I
them to pass mine on down. Don't give me shit if I'm in the ground.
It's for the living, and I don't. You know, I never knew Chadwick personally. But I kind of can't imagine knowing the thespian that man was.
Oh my God! Yes,
classically trained in the theater arts and just such a student of the craft. I don't know that he would have been salty. Like the culture is being salty right now.
No, that's everybody grieving and just crying out because we had an assumption that he was going to receive it. The performance delivered, everything was there, but he was not. And I think that is just, they could have honored him in a different way that really, you know, honored his work.
I think that's smart what you're saying too. And I hope the Academy is listening because I do think sometimes they set an expectation that then they cannot match. Mm-hmm. And then that's really the issue. I don't think it's so much Anthony Hopkins winning this award because I'm sure he deserved it as well. And that's the other thing. These things, they're like beauty pageants. Once you get to the top five, any bitch up there could win.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I'm serious. Seriously. And I speak from experience. Like, what am I mad? Like, this young lady's not fucking gorgeous as well? Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to remember these are very subjective categories. And once you've, you know, narrowed the field to the top five in the world, which is what you're doing with an Academy Award, it's almost anybody's game to an extent, or at least between one or two, you know. And I'm going to say the same thing on the Best Actress category. I'm going to stay unpopular. Viola Davis, brilliant performance in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Yeah.
I venture to say, I can't say, and I saw, and Audra Day was fantastic, magnificent in the United States versus Billie Holiday. But like, let's just stay there. If Audra would have won, Dustin, do you think people would have felt Viola was snubbed?
Of course.
It's inevitable. Here lies the rub.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's the rub. So to me, like, if we can,
and
you know,
vice versa.
Right? You know? And if Viola would have won, now that's a snubbing of the young ingenue, Audra Day. So, you know, I think that's actually a really good example where you've got, you know, of course, Frances McDormand.
Yes.
Frances McDormand won Best Actress for Normaland. Again, another film I have not seen. So I can't speak on this woman's performance.
But
did you see it?
Yeah. And, you know,
what'd you think?
It was a great, brilliant, brilliant performance. But did it right? And maybe I'm biased. You know what I mean? But Viola Davis made me. I wanted Audra Day to win for the story that it would represent for her career. Right.
Right.
I wanted Viola
acting for acting chops. But come on,
Viola made me uncomfortable watching Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And that's how good her performance was. I was uncomfortable watching her act like that. That's how brilliant of a performance she delivered. That was Viola's statue to me.
To me. Okay, so right. So absent seeing the woman that actually won, between Audra and Viola, I concur.
Yeah.
I concur. I actually felt like, quote, if we talk about robberies, Viola was robbed of the Golden Globe because Audra did win that. Same category, both nominated. I think Audra, again, you can't take anything away from this sister's performance. It was
nothing.
Brilliant.
She's how transformed. But literally.
No, see, that's what I was going to say about Viola.
Oh my and Vi- God.
And because maybe we've seen such a broader scope of Viola Davis's genius, it hit different. Like, we've seen Viola do remarkable things on screen for years, but what she did in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom was literally transformative.
Literally. She was a different person.
She was a different person and a different era and a different everything. So
she'll be back though. Viola will be back.
Oh, Viola.
And Titus Kemp, Andra Day will be back too.
I agree. I mean, I think she's commit. I've seen that she has kept that physique that she adopted for the film.
Body.
She looks incredible. Didn't love her Oscar red carpet dress though.
I didn't understand. And if you're going to do chainmail, everybody knows you go to Versace, right? But listen, but it's okay. Never. But right. You
her
know.
And Vera tried it. Her and Vera Wang tried it. She looks a beautiful young lady. But listen. She had a beautiful night for your debut film to be Oscar nominated.
VMAs.
That's where she was going. Maybe the Billboard Music Awards.
Billboard. Perfect.
She was going to the Billboard Music Awards and looked fabulous, just not for the Academy Awards.
Not when you got Angela Bassett and them floating down the red carpet looking like someone literally pulled them out of a dollhouse and just dropped them onto the
movie
red
star.
Like,
it's what you said, hell? Dustin.
Yeah.
They looked, and I just, being
Hollywood
a fan of old
glam.
Hollywood glam, there you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. Any other awards, I don't care. I don't care what you wear to the SAG Awards. I don't care what you wear to the Golden Globes. I don't care what you wear to the BAFTA. I don't care what you wear to none of that. But the Oscars, baby, come looking like a movie star. Please.
You have to. Yep. Please. I agree.
Also, in weekend news, we laid to rest an icon in the culture and in hip-hop. Of course, DMX laid to rest in New York City. And New York legislators, Dustin, declaring later, I believe it's later this, in the month of May, of course, we will have an official DMX day, which I
Wonderful.
Think is extremely important.
Wonderful.
Extremely important. Much to do on the internet about Faith Evans' performance. Do you care to comment?
Not really, because I mean, first of all, everybody in that building was grieving. It just is what it is. No one should have been up there looking their best if they were there for the right reasons.
Yeah, it's not a concert.
It's not.
Let us remember.
It ain't a fashion show. It ain't a performance. It's not a it is a performance, but it's not a concert. Like
it's not
you
a
said.
Concert.
So,
no.
Yeah.
Okay, I concur. And listen, I just live for Faith. And I saw a tweet that was like, listen, even if we're gonna say this wasn't her best day, she can now sing every hoe in the industry. So
that's
don't
just
play.
What that is.
And that's just what that is. And that's just what that is. So. Like really low key, I was, if we go back to the verses of Babyface and Teddy Riley.
Yes.
You know, when I think that the industry and even the culture does not revere the vocal talent that is Faith Evans.
Yeah. This is a big conversation for me because you know who my favorite singer is. You know, I love Mary J. Blige with all my heart.
Okay.
So this is a very delicate conversation for me to have. So I do believe, though, that Faith kind of positioned herself in a way that did not allow her to be maybe received
as big as she could have.
Yeah.
You think it was too, do you think it was too much of the Biggie shadow? Do you
think
it was just being on Bad Boy?
I think that contributed to it. Later on, you know, 20 years into her career, Faith has kind of mastered her ownership of that space in R&B music and gone on to do other things. But I don't really think Faith was positioned to be an international crossover, successful, like R&B singer, the way that other people were, you know, and some of it, I believe, was her own doing.
I agree with that. It's just, I don't know. I'm a big person on just raw vocal ability.
And that's just,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, me personally, miss me with the big choreographed 20 backup dance. I don't give a fuck about that personally.
Get on that mic and sing.
Stand in front of the microphone and blow.
Yep.
Period. Yep. And Faith is one of the very few women in her generation, Dustin, as you know, that can do that. Truly do that. So
Still sounds amazing.
Still sounds amazing. That woman can just sing her fucking face off.
Voice is a literal instrument, Ebony.
It's a literal instrument. Her, Kiki Wyatt, Deborah Cox. It's a small pool of just pure raw vocalist.
Countess Vaughn.
Yeah. Okay. Now is going to be a great time for us to go ahead and transition to this docket. I'm not doing it with you, Dustin. Not today. But like I said, Countess Von. And no shade. Countess Von can sing.
She can. We love
No, Countess. She can we sing. Love Countess. But uh-huh. You real messy for that. Okay. So first up on the docket, whew, I believe I'm going to say this is some good news in legal policy. Mm-hmm. Manhattan DA Cy Vance, he is now stopping all prosecutions around the crime of prostitution. An actual hearing where he made a motion to dismiss over 900 prostitution and unlicensed massage cases that dated all the way back to the 1970s, D. Mm-hmm. He's also moved, this is a big one, 5,000 cases moved to dismiss, again, wow, related to a New York statute going back to the 70s, 1976, anti-loitering statute, which really was targeted at the trans community. It was basically a law specifically curated and executed to criminalize members of the trans community that worked in sex work, because it literally banned just the mere walking in certain areas for the purpose of prostitution. Vance is also on record, of course, as saying he has not prosecuted any of these prostitution-related crimes since 2016 anyway. But now the difference here, Dustin, is there's now a formal policy statement coming from the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. And let me just say why this is very, very important.
Okay.
For the obvious reason that why are we criminalizing one's own right to personal enterprise in the most original kind of way possible.
I mean, what personal,
one,
personal.
Right, very personal. What one chooses to do with their own body. Last I checked, this was America, a very capitalistic society. So if that's the good that you, if that's the commodity that you want to profit from,
hey,
why can't you? And all these kinds of criminalization laws do, Dustin, is create a very unsafe, dangerous environment for the men and women and non-binaries that do this work. And we know that they disproportionately impact and target and can be deadly consequences for what? Black, brown, East Asian, LGBTQ, as always, the most vulnerable among us, exactly, the harshest consequence. So I'm happy to see it. But let's keep in mind, and this is an important note, Abigail Swenson, she's an attorney for the AIDS Society's Exploitation Intervention Project, which is a big organization that supports the decriminalization of sex work. She says that this new policy cannot replace the urgency to pass actual legislation to decriminalize sex work and provide criminal relief for those who have already been convicted. This is why this is important, Dee. Cy Vance is executing prosecutorial discretion. Great. He's saying under his administration as the DA, we're not going to prosecute these crimes. Wonderful. That means that is subject to change if and when another DA steps into that space, because then it will be up to that district attorney's prosecutorial discretion. And let's be clear, Cy Vance has already announced he's not running for re-election. Now, all the people that are announced as running, they also support a decriminalization of prostitution. But you just can't assume that is the point
of
the story.
That's what they say. You know?
And that is what they're saying on the campaign trail. And shit, we know a lot of folks say anything on the campaign trail and act different in office. So I do want to just emphasize that point. This is a great policy under this particular prosecutor's discretion. Clap, clap. Let's not clap too hard. It took him too long, and it still criminalizes the quote Johns, if you will. So while it doesn't criminalize the person selling, you know, the product, if you will, or the sex, it does criminalize the purchaser. So many in the decriminalizing community still say this policy from Cy Vance doesn't go far enough because there is still an element of criminalization afoot, which it is.
Yeah.
But we have to keep the foot on the gas, D, as it comes to the legislative efforts, because that's really when we're going to see long-term change. We also need to have the wiping of records from people that have already been convicted of these prostitution and prostitution adjacent crimes. So that's important. Moving on to the docket, Dr. Dre, Nicole Young. Now, I'm tired of talking about this divorce too, but the only reason I put it on the docket is because I want to emphasize something important that I want people to know they have an opportunity to use as well. because a lot of people don't know about this little legal tool. So the headline is this: Dr. Dre and his estranged wife, Nicole Young. I know y'all know all about it. This shit been going on for over a year now. This messy ass, trifling ass divorce. Whew, almost $1 billion at stake. So far, Dre, you know, y'all was mad at me on my IG live, but it came to pass. Dre has been paying her about $2 million a month, temporary spousal support, until this shit is finalized. So there we have it. Dre was also recently ordered to get a new attorney because Laura Wasserman, who is a huge divorce lawyer in the state of California, she represents Kim K and many other high profile celebs. She's on Dre's current legal team, Dustin. She works with a lawyer who represented Nicole and Dre as husband and wife. Okay. You ain't got to be Johnny Cochran to see where this is going.
I mean, come on.
So Laura's conflicted out. So Dre has to find a new attorney, which always sucks at this stage in the game.
Yeah.
I said Wasserman, excuse me. Her name is Laura Wasser. But here's the tea. As of July, Dre and Nicole will be legally single. Now, if you go back to an episode of Holding Court, where we talked about more money, more problems, and I talked about I don't believe in no relationship status called separated.
Yes,
okay.
You did.
You're either married or you are single. And I have reasons why. Go back and listen to it if you missed it.
Right.
This creates a legal definition that Dr. Dre and Nicole will both be legally single, not separated, not estranged. They will be single individuals free to go about partnership and even remarriage if they so choose. This will happen as early as July when a judge signs off. Now that's important. Motherfucker out here talking about they single. I'm very serious, Dustin. I always require seeing the documentation. I want to see where the judge has signed, and I want to see the. I've been burned.
Look, I gotta know, and I gotta know.
I need to see the clerk stamp,
date, the raised stamp,
right? Because a judge can sign it if the darn stamp, the court stamp from the clerk of court ain't. Man, listen, okay. You're laughing, but I promise you. Okay, so that dude looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, I'm sure it's on your
she
iPhone.
She ain't playing, y'all. She
pull
ain't
it
playing.
Up. I got mine. Okay. I got mine.
Okay.
Listen, okay. So once that happens, D, they will both be single, but their divorce technically will be ongoing. Catch this, T. So that $800 million, almost billion-dollar fortune, that is still undecided. So what Dre and Nicole agreed to do, here's the legal tool. It's called a bifurcation of their divorce proceeding. Okay, a lot of people have not heard of this. This is where you separate the legal standing of your relationship from the property settlement. It's very rarely used because in most cases, the relationship legality status point is the leverage used to make people move on the settlement portion. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not going to agree to the divorce until you pay me out adequately. That typically is the way it works. This is a rarity, probably just because there's so much money at stake, but anybody could use this term. And so if you are somebody out there and you are going through a long ass divorce, feel like you've been divorcing longer than you've been married, which happens a lot, actually. And y'all can't agree on what to do with the house or what to do with the cars or what to do with the bank accounts or whatever it is. But let's say you've fallen in love, or let's just say you just want to be out here moving in the streets. Okay. You can ask the court to bifurcate your divorce proceeding, which will allow you and your spouse to be legally single people. And then you can table the financial settlement portion until you can work that part out. I think it's pretty cool. What do you think, D?
It depends, because I feel like this can be used to someone's benefit and to somebody else's detriment. So why are we doing this is what I would need know. You know what
I'm
saying?
Well, maybe he want to move forward with his rumored girlfriend, April Jones. I don't know.
It looked like he moving forward with her to me. The way they look coming out their restaurant, I said, oh, yeah, they've been moving forward and backward.
Listen, but that's typically how I've seen it used. Actually, I'm laughing, but you make a good point. Normally, I see this done when somebody is ready to get remarried, to be honest with you. And obviously you can't be remarried until you are divorced.
Right.
I want to say Les Moonves, the former
CBS.
President of CBS, because he was taking too long with his, you know, gazillion dollar divorce from his ex-wife, and he wanted to marry Julie Chen.
Yeah.
I want to say that he went, they did a bifurcation as well, or, you know, or there was some kind of like expediency around that. But yeah.
Oh, so there's some rich nigga shit. That's what basically. This is.
Okay. I mean, typically.
Okay. Let's just call it what it is. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't want nobody to feel left out, Dustin. You know, y'all might be squabbling over $5,000.
True.
You might have found the love of your life. Okay. So yes, Dre and Nicole, legally single folks as of this summer. Still fighting over that $1 billion, but legally single. Good for them. All right, listen, y'all. Speaking of support payments, here at Holden Court, we need to make some. So we're going to take a quick break, and we've got much more Holden Court after the break. Stay with us. All right, y'all. Welcome back to Holden Court. Some news that broke in politics recently, Dustin. Your best friend, Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh, my God.
She announced that she's running for California governor. Now, again, normally I don't do these kind of corny-ass Kardashian-adjacent stories. You know this.
And this is one of them.
And this is really one.
This is
but
one.
I really wanted to talk to you about your purview on non-politically experienced celebrities running for big time office. That's the only reason I'm talking about this shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the headlines for Caitlyn, if you've been under a rock, she's running for the California governor seat. This is happening because current Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom is probably going to face this recall election later this year, blah, 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 blah. If he's recalled, California voters are going to have to do two things, Dustin. They'll have to remove him, Gavin Newsom, and choose a replacement. This has actually not happened very often in history, but it did happen back in 2003. Democratic Governor Gray Davis, nice name, shitty governor. Mm-hmm. He was recalled, actually, by the people in California and replaced with none other than Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is another one of those non-politically experienced celebrity candidates. And then, you know, there's word on the street, people talking about Matthew McConaughey. Putting his name in the hat to run for Texas governor. Then you've got, I think, a recent poll, over 50, 60% of Americans saying that they would like to see The Rock run for the United States presidency. We know we just came off the heels of fucking Trump. I don't want to just generalize. So I really want to have an honest discussion with you, D. What are your thoughts on celebrities in office?
Listen, unless you are a person who has dedicated your educational career to studying political science, okay, everybody has to start somewhere. So I'm not going to say that, you know, people are, you know, without previous experience in government are ill-equipped to hold office. I'm not going to say that because it's an untrue statement. However, okay,
and caveat,
big, all caps, however. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that any and everybody is a good candidate to run for office, especially when you're talking about the governor, of a state with as many problems as fucking California. And Caitlyn Jenner, no one has asked you for anything. We don't give a damn about your story. We don't give a damn about anything that you have to say in relation to the state of California, because you can't even run your own household properly.
Bloop.
Your family has been a mess for years.
Bloop.
And I'm not just talking about the Kardashians. I'm talking about them Jenners.
Before.
It's all kinds of issues that lie between Caitlyn Jenner and her children. Mm-hmm. Caitlyn Jenner is a person who was a lifetime Republican, politically aligned himself. Yeah, aligned themselves with Donald Trump and all of his mania until there were blatant attacks against the transgender community, which Caitlyn is halfway a part of, if we're being honest. Okay.
Yes.
People respect Caitlyn's transition as they should. They respect her pronouns as they should. But Caitlyn still makes decisions and choices that are aligned with her previous identity. Okay. And that's the difference between, that's why it's hard to stomach this. So as you can see, I'm not for it. There's a lot of actually funny, witty things that I could say about this situation, but I'm not.
You know, I'm here for, well, if you feel the need, you know,
I'm
don't
just,
hold yourself
this week,
back.
I'm a hold on holding court this week, okay? but just know, nobody wants this. No one wants this.
Nobody seems to want it. Apparently, even, as you mentioned, the folks from her own LGBTQ plus community, not here for it.
Like me.
Because of her consistent,
Shout out to the
black G. Because of her consistent alignment with the oppressor. And
Thank you.
I mean, that's clearly what it is. I mean, you got radical oppressive legislation efforts coming out of the GOP to, you know, take back the small gained rights of the, of a community that is still so vulnerable among us. And are you fucking serious? And now when you say it like that brilliantly and pretty obviously, yeah, I'm sure there's some residue of her holding on to her privileged identity, that's at play. And that cannot be trusted. I believe it too.
Caitlyn ain't had shit to say about a lot of things that have been going on in this world that, that I guess whatever influence she has could have been, you know, used for. Even you say what you want about Arnold Schwarzenegger, but at least he had the decency to come out with a beautiful statement after the insurgents on January 6th, you know, where he really identified what some problems were and called things what they were. So I don't have time for Caitlyn Jenner and her kitten heels. I don't have time. You can miss me with Caitlyn Jenner. And it actually infuriates me to even see this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm going to start there and I'm going to work backwards. I think you said a lot of powerful things there, Dustin. Number one, I'm not about to disqualify carte blanche folks that don't have previous political experience, because some could argue some of y'all with all this previous political experience have been part of the fucking problem for so long. You don't know how to be a part of the solution. That's an argument. So I do think it's very feasible and possible that someone from the outside of political ranks could come in and be an extremely effective political leader. Caitlyn Jenner, no ma'am, but not you, because of all the reasons we've pointed out. I'm trying to think, though. There are some people. Let's just play a little brainstorming session here. Oh, for sure. I mean, Oprah Winfrey, no doubt. No, seriously, no fucking doubt. I think John Legend could be interesting in office, actually. Yeah, I don't need any more albums from John Legend. That's me personally.
Yeah, I'm still an ordinary person. I don't need no more. I still need ordinary people. That's all. I don't want to, you know.
I don't need any more music released. I think he's really smart. I really do. I think he's exceptionally gifted in terms of understanding what's going on culturally and the intersection of kind of politics and policy. He's also been very consistent, as you said. You know, he's put his money where his mouth is. He develops content around pushing liberation of groups of people forward. So he is someone that if he said he wanted to run, you know, for a Senate seat or something like that, I think that could be interesting.
Yeah.
Mama
Joyce. Candy Burris's mother. Perfect.
We know who Mama Joyce is.
For those who don't, that's who we need to put in office right there, okay? Because she don't mind saying it like it is. And if you want the swamp drained, I can't think of a better person to pull the plug. Mama Joyce.
I feel Mama Joyce on first day of office, I have Todd's ass indicted.
Just because.
On anything.
Just because.
Just because anything. Somebody give me some dirt on his ass. I can hear Mama Joyce right now. Oh, poor Todd.
But let me see. Who else?
Yeah, who else do you think would be good?
What about Nas? Nas has made some great business moves recently. Really refined his whole representation, his image in the media. He's got clout and respect in the business now. What about Nas?
I'm gonna let you finish. That's all true.
Yeah,
I'm going to need Nas before he would enter any type of conversation like that to go ahead and make some kind of full accounting for the years of accusations of brutality against Khalees and women outside of Khalees as well. And if so, because he's never been convicted of anything, so I don't know what the evidence is around it, but I think Nas does have some explaining to do.
What about Master P?
Oh, yeah, I love Master P. Now, that's somebody I could get behind.
Okay.
Consistent brother, brilliant brother, understands the nature of American business systems at a very deep level, always about engaging community interest. Master P is actually a brilliant one. That's who the hell need to be running for somebody's governor. Seriously.
Yeah.
Master P is an excellent recommendation.
Wouldn't it be great to see him win governor of Louisiana?
Could happen. Not for nothing. I mean, that sounds like a lot. No. The South is positioned to go bluer and bluer and bluer. Why? Yeah. Because the example we saw in Georgia, which is if you can keep these voter suppression laws at bay, thank you, Stacey Abrams and her collective, you have a disproportionately blacker electorate in these southern states. So it actually stands to reason that we have a better chance of getting black governors and U.S. senators elected in the South than we do anywhere else in the U.S.
How about that?
So come on, Percy.
Yeah, Percy.
Governor Percy. Governor, yeah. Percy. Governor Percy. Governor Percy.
That's right.
Yeah. NBA, hip hop, business mogul, governor for America. I'm here for it. I like that a lot. That's some good ass news. So yep. With that, we're going to go to a break. We're gonna transition on a high right there.
Perfect.
Go pay some more bills and we'll come back with more Holding Court in a minute. Y'all, welcome back to Holding Court. Dustin and I were just talking about how we want to start the rumor of Master P running for governor. Y'all, if y'all want to tweet that, please do.
Heard it here first.
All right, y'all. So welcome back to Holding Court. We're going to go straight to the Supreme Court, actually. When I was producing the show over the weekend, Dustin, with Ashley, I got a couple of DMs of jurors asking for this story specifically. Okay. So I want to shout out that we really, truly do, y'all. We take such guidance from what you guys want to know deeper meaning behind. And so just last week, the Supreme Court rejected a challenge from a juvenile life offender. This was a man who was convicted at the age of 15 by the name of Brett Jones. This was in the state of Mississippi, speaking of the South. Brett was convicted of murder, of killing his grandfather with a knife during a domestic dispute. He was 15 at the time of the killing and sentencing. He later claimed that the sentence, because he was convicted and then he was sentenced to life behind bars without the opportunity for parole. That's really what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. And he brought a constitutional challenge, took it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. He said under the Eighth Amendment, with the Eighth Amendment, of course, protects people from excessive, cruel, and unusual punishment, yeah. Right? And he is arguing that because he was a juvenile at the time, to sentence him to life without even the opportunity of parole is a cruel and unusual punishment. For a juvenile in an American justice system. Well, apparently, Dustin, the Supreme Court said, nah, you can guess the breakdown of the vote, 6-3, all six conservative justices, including the one that was just rammed down our throats last hour, Amy Coney Barrett, they all voted that no, it was not unconstitutional to sentence a juvenile to life behind bars without even the possibility of parole. And what they relied upon on that ruling, Dustin, is this. Generally speaking, courts feel that to sentence a juvenile to life without parole, you have to have a separate kind of finding of fact, normally some kind of subsequent hearing is how this is normally done, that says that that particular juvenile defendant is incapable of rehabilitation. The law calls that permanently incorrigible. Okay.
Okay.
And that's a high burden. So what normally happens, D, is that people can't really prove in a hearing that this particular juvenile, child of sorts, is beyond the opportunity of rehabilitation. Because how would you know that yet?
Right.
So that's why you don't typically see juveniles given life without parole. Here come punk-ass Kavanaugh. That's why his ass should have never been confirmed. He's talking about, well, we're not saying that states can't add additional sentencing guidelines and say that they can choose to require such additional finding, but we're not going to say that the U.S. Constitution demands it. And that basically is what all of the conservatives agreed upon with their ruling. That here in America, land of the free, you can be a juvenile offender and you can get life without parole. As always, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, shout out to the Bronx. She always gets it right in this dissent. She says, Jones and other juvenile offenders like him seek only the possibility of parole. Not the certainty of release, but the opportunity at some point in their lives to show a parole board all that they have done to rehabilitate themselves and to ask for a second chance. The Eighth Amendment requires that most juvenile offenders be given this small hope for some years of life outside prison walls. And of course, she cited some prior court precedent in her dissent. I hated to see this decision, but this is why elections have consequences, Dustin Ross.
Yeah.
This is a direct result of Trump's administration.
Yeah.
This ruling doesn't happen, Dustin, but for a 6-3 conservative slant. So if you go back to a couple of weeks ago on Holding Court, we had the great Judge Shamika Reinhart. We talked about the consequences of expanding the Supreme Court. There are consequences, but there's also opportunity. Because if we uptick the number of justices from 9 to 15, as Biden's administration is currently exploring, you do course correct this hyper-conservative majority that gives us a ruling like this bullshit right here that says children in America convicted as juveniles can actually potentially never, ever, ever see the light of day because our Constitution has deemed them not worthy of rehabilitation, not possible.
Yeah. Yeah, this is... This is really heartbreaking when you think about what they're actually discussing, which are some children, right? Mm-hmm. People who have not had a chance to even begin to represent themselves in the world, to even understand the responsibility they have to represent themselves appropriately. These are people who made mistakes. There are bad apples. There are some really just fucked up, rotten ass people, and they've been rotten ever since they were children. They were rotten teenagers and they're rotten adults. Those people do exist, mm-hmm. but that's a rarity. Okay. It's right. not as common as people who have simply made a mistake. And I think it's a damn shame, but this literally is the blood of it. This blood lies on the hands of everyone who voted for Donald Trump, everyone yep. who put him in a position to get an asshole like Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme mm-hmm. Court. And this is what we have to deal with now. Shit like this. These are the hard consequences of people voting for the wrong reasons.
And they people have, not they have voting. To deal
with, and people not, and people fucking not voting. Even more. Yes. Even yep. more. Because yep. if y'all asses would have got
asses out,
it would have overridden this.
Yep.
We would have had more people voting for the right thing. So all you contrarians, all right. of you who have decided that, well, I'm just not going to vote for nope. That's stupid. It's the dumbest thing I've dumbest ever heard hell. In my life. And now we're dealing with this. Babies whose lives are taken away from them for a mistake that they made and got caught for. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of you motherfuckers walking around that made these same mistakes and never got caught and were allowed to go ahead and live sure. and establish yourself. So this, the shit like this really, really bothers me, Ebony. I have family members who have been compromised by the legal system as young yes. people. You know, this is a personal thing for me, and I literally hate to see it. I hate to see this.
I do too.
That's where I'm at with it.
And you know, you're highlighting something that people often miss. There's an actual scientific reasoning behind why the court defers to leniency for mm-hmm. juveniles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just because it sounds good. It is because their cognitive lobes, okay, the decision-making yeah. functions of our brain matter have not even been fully developed.
Yeah.
Okay? There's some science that proves that shit's not fully developed until your early to mid-20s. Okay?
This is disgusting and mean and nasty.
And nasty. And I say, cruel. As a legal scholar, it does fly in the face of the Eighth Amendment constitutional protection, which says, listen, some motherfuckers belong in jail.
That's right.
Absolutely. But we shall not do it in a way that runs afoul to what amounts to cruel and unusual.
It's
and
simple.
To say that a child is incapable of any level of rehabilitation is, by definition, Dustin, cruel and unusual.
Damn period. Shame. Yep.
Period. All right, we're going to end the docket with something that's a little more positive. Okay. Actually, I think this is quite positive. I was talking to a friend of mine over the weekend, Mr. Gianno Caldwell, former colleague of mine at Fox News. Gianno's very fucking conservative, and God bless him.
Okay.
So we often have, you know, big, huge policy disagreements, normally over cocktails.
Spirited
conversation with some spirits the alongside us. Yes.
Yeah.
So we were doing that over the weekend in light of the killing, of course, of Brother George Floyd, the Chauvin verdict, but then also the killing of Dante Wright. And basically, I was just making the argument that says this. I get that police officers have a, quote, inherently dangerous job. And that's not a shade quote. That's a true thing. However, a lot of these things where Black men and women and children are being fucking shot and killed for, or otherwise killed by law enforcement, a cop should have never even been on the scene in the first place. Okay? Let's go to the brother that was shot and killed, and I believe it was a Wendy's parking lot in Atlanta. I think it was last summer. You know, it was a traffic issue. It was a DUI. The man was not driving. He was asleep in his vehicle. Okay? That, to me, Dustin, didn't even necessarily warrant criminal intervention, not at that particular point.
Right.
So all of that to say, the headline is this: City of Oakland, California is now allowing some of these 911 calls to be answered by community responders. This is a very big deal to me. Their city council is set to approve a pilot program that will allow certain, not all, but certain 911 calls to be directed, instead of to cops, to trained civilians that are specialized, Dustin, in handling mental health and other community crisis issues. Mm. So some examples: public urination, welfare checks, shit like that, where, you know, we don't need somebody showing up with a taser and a firearm and a billy club, okay? You can simply have a trained professional, okay, deal with these citizens and civilians. I like to see that. A member of the Coalition for Police Accountability in the area said this: we don't want police involved in these calls because we're sick of the death count. We need resident-centered responses. I just think it's a wonderful thing when the community is given the opportunity to, quote, police itself. That is what this kind of pilot program will allow. And I do think we'll see a decrease, Dustin, in the number of Black deaths at the hands of law enforcement. Wonderful. And that's what matters to me.
Good news all the way around. May this pilot program be mimicked and implemented all across the lands. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's that.
All across the land.
Like my girl T.S. Madison says, all across the lands, all across the land. That's right.
I yes. love it. Listen, and it's also cheaper. And you know, for those, and this is where, you know, there used to be, not anymore, because the shit has just got so racialized and radicalized, but mm-hmm. there used to be some small opportunity of crossover between Republicans and Democrats on this issue of criminal justice reform. Because, you know, conservatives are supposed to be fiscally conservative. Last I checked, that's what they say they are. They say they don't want to spend no money. Okay, cool. That we have in common. So we should all be looking for the most economically reasonable solution.
Yeah.
And in this case, this is the state, the city of Oakland trying to reduce the police budget by 50%. So this is an example of defunding the police. And instead of giving all those millions to just more and more and more policing, you only need about $3 million to implement this pilot program. And because of COVID and other budget cuts, right now this program is only going to get $1.85 million. And the program, by the way, it's called MACRO. That stands for Mobile Assistance Community Responders of Oakland program. That's a lot of damn letters. So we're going to call it MACRO. They're going to get about $2 million, 1.85 of the $3 million they were promised, and start the program. I'm with you, D. I hope it's implemented. I hope it's duplicated. And if it goes well, estimates say that this will take about 5 to 8% of current 911 calls away from the police. That frees them up to deal with the murderers, the rapists, the burglars. That's where the fuck they need to be. Not out here, you know, twiddling their fucking thumbs, dealing with very slight, female students, young girls, in the case of Micaiah, having, you know, a schoolyard shuffle or whatever that was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Yep. I love
this. Ridiculous.
This is good news, like you said.
Good news. So we're going to end on that note. Listen, y'all, thank you so much for listening. As always, Dustin and I appreciate you. We read the reviews. We read your comments. Yes, they inform us, and they really just give us a lot of guidance as we put this show together for y'all each and every week. So keep doing it. Listen, tell a friend and get the word out about Holding Court. Holding Court comes to you from Uppity Productions in association with Dossie Media and is presented by the Black Effect Network from iHeartRadio. Audio services, y'all, give it up for 101 Productions, Fela, Dennis, Joy. They're the best. Check them out at 101productions.com. Y'all listen, join us next week. We will be back with more Court in Session. And in the meantime, stay safe, keep your faith, get vaccinated, wear your mask. And Dustin, what you want the people to always do?
This week, I wanted to do two things, Ebony. Oh, I want you to read your terms and conditions, but I also want you to tune in to my girl and your girl, okay? Ebony K. Williams making history, as she should, as the first Black Real Housewife of New York City on Bravo TV, May 4th, okay?
Yay!
8 p.m. to 8 p.m., or is it 8 p.m.?
9 p.m. 8 p.m. Central, I guess. Yeah, 9 p.m. Eastern.
9 Eastern, 8 Central on Bravo. Okay, my homegirl is holding the hell out of her golden apple. So, time. We're so proud of you, Ebony.
Thank you, Dustin. All I can tell you is I saw the screener episode, and I think you're going to love it. I think you're going to love it. I'm so excited to share it with you and to the jurors. I'm excited because the jurors are really going to, I think the jurors get a big dose of, you know, my crazy ass on holding court, but this is just going to be another layer, you know, layer of you know, my crazy self. So I'm looking forward to
it. Proud of you, girl. And the internet is on your side. People are so excited for you, Ebony, and so happy to see you on that screen. So this is great. I'm excited. So everybody tune in. Bravo TV,
yes.
May 4th, 9 p.m. Support our girl, Ebony K. Williams. Thank
May the 4th be with you.
That's right, baby.